The Auckland Art Deco Society welcomes you to our Deco Retro program here on Planet FM. We will bring you interesting interviews, updates of future Deco Society and other related events, also book reviews, handy household hints, and other snippets capturing the glamour and fascination of a bygone era. Deco Retro.
Good afternoon, listeners. This is Nancy on the Deco Retro program. Today we have in the studio a young woman who was born in Australia. She came to New Zealand several years ago, bringing with her a precious cargo of genuine vintage costumes that she had accumulated from her years of owning a costume hiring business in Australia. All these costumes are genuinely old, not reproductions. She settled in Clevedon, Auckland, and started a shop called Clevedon Costume and Vintage Apparel. The shop was divided into three sections: hire, exhibition, and workshop. Along with renting and now making vintage clothes for charities, events, weddings, etc., she has been involved in the staging of corporate events here in New Zealand and also overseas in Doha for the Arab Games in 2011, where she was the workroom supervisor for designing the opening and closing of the Games costumes. She's also been involved in several events in Sydney, including the Sydney Paralympics, Moondance Pictures in Sydney, doing costumes for Adventures of Roman, The Ball, and for Star City, where she did design and supply of costumes. In New Zealand, she has done several corporate events with Air New Zealand and Vintage Day Out. She holds a master's degree in design and also teaches at St. Cuthbert's College. I would now like to introduce you to Gracie Matthews. Good afternoon, Gracie. Lovely to have you here.
Good afternoon, Nancy.
Now, you know, in Australia you had this business of vintage hiring out vintage costumes. How did you come to get all these costumes? I mean, they just don't appear, do they?
No, they don't just appear, and it's the regular question that most vintage businesses get by their clients: where do you get your gear? Well, I've been a collector since I was in my teens, and I used to collect fabrics when I was doing fashion because we couldn't afford to buy fabric in the shop. So I would be raiding mum's closet or the opportunity shops and looking for fabrics that I could use for my fashion for study.
Yes.
Consequently, I got a really good eye for the eras and what was going to come on trend, and I would see things and want to just to keep them, and because I love the fabric that was involved. Mm-hmm. And consequently, one box grew to two boxes to three boxes,
okay.
As you do, and then
the next thing you had a business going.
So years later, then I went off and did freelancing for a few years, and then I had an opportunity to take on a small costume business in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the opportunity to start opening up all those boxes, and they just kept accumulating because
wonderful.
I was getting other jobs for film or stage shows that needed particular...
Just grew and grew.
Yeah, just needed particular looks, and I would find things and go, oh, that's a great fabric, I'll put it aside for that.
Yes.
You know, and sometimes they never got used, so... Hence the collection.
Mm. Did you sort of get any from op shops or...?
Yeah, op shops on occasions. There's a few faves that still exist in Sydney now. There's lots of go-to places. I found a lot of nice places here in Auckland and through New Zealand as well.
So they're still here? Because a lot of those shops have disappeared.
You've just got to look and you've got to know what you're looking for. And as I said, I've always had a plan before I go in. I do a scan and go, is there anything there that catches my eye? If it doesn't catch my eye, I just walk out.
Yeah.
I don't waste my time going through. But I also used to have a fellow come to me in Sydney, and he used to work in the rag trade for supplying rags for the mechanics and the tradesmen and stuff like that.
Yeah, we have those sort of things here. You throw all your rags into this
so
bin.
What would happen in those big bins as part of that recycle cycle, I guess, the rags would go to rag bags for the mechanics. Then there would be stuff that would go for baby's wear or children's wear or high-end things. And then there'd be a bin for really odd clothing or overcoats or weird stuff. So Mr. Hans, he used to turn up to my shop with a 3 metre length or 2 metre length big bag and say, look, these are all the odd things that I can't use. Do you want it? Give me 50 bucks for the bag. And I'd have a quick look and there'd be an overcoat on the top and I'd go, yeah, all right. Had no idea what was in there. Pandora's box indeed. So, you know, after the day's work, I'd take it home and go through, because obviously you need to launder everything. And I would find...
They're a bit grubby, I imagine.
So we're talking in mid-90s. So there was... one day I got a bag of brand new Exile taffeta ball dresses from the 80s.
Oh, my gosh.
And they were
retailing
for like $300 each. And they were in there. There was overcoats. There was beautiful 60s beaded dresses in there sometimes. There would be hats, swimwear. There'd be just...
Some people just don't value those things, do they?
And because he was only looking at it, it's like, oh, it's got too many things. I can't use it as a rag.
No.
But it's... He knew there was a value there for something.
Yeah.
So, and from those bags, you know, some of it would get chucked out or recycled, but most of it, the fabric was so fabulous. I would just hold on to
wonderful.
It. Yeah, it was good fun.
Great.
Good old days.
Good one. Now, you chose to sort of settle in Clevedon and you have your shop there. Why Clevedon? Did you feel it had potential for this type of thing?
Not really. My partner's is a Kiwi and his mum lived in Ngātia, and we basically did a circle from the airport between the airport and Ngātia and the city, went right, okay, anywhere in this circle we did a target.
Yeah, a feel for it.
and we decided we didn't want to live in suburbia because we lived in on a train line in Sydney for many years.
Oh, okay.
So it was, and then it was the day that he got lost going to Ngātia one day, and we went up this dirt track in the back of Clevedon and we went, somewhere like this would be very cool to settle down.
Yeah, it's a super place to be.
It is
anyway.
A great place,
it's lovely. Now, tell us a bit about you being involved in the Arab Games. That sounds really fascinating.
Yeah, it was interesting. When I sold up my business in 2010 and we moved over here, I'd sort of cut all my ties, really, from Sydney and the jobs, because I really was sick of the costume hire. And the industry was changing, lots of things coming online.
It does, that industry, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's changing.
So, I thought, pack up all my vintage, bring it to New Zealand and do something with Napier, because knowing of the Art Deco scene.
Yes.
But in between that, I had to take a real job, and I was working 7 till 5 with a hardware company, and I got a call from my colleague Janet Hine, from Janet Hine Design, who I'd worked with the Paralympics, we had done shows together with Hot Shoe Shuffle as well and David Atkins Enterprises, and she rang me and said, are you working on World Cup? That was the year 2011, Rugby World Cup opening ceremony. And I said, no, never got a call. And she said, oh, that's strange, they should have got you. And I went, no, they didn't, never mind. She said, goodo, can you come to the Middle East? And I went, sure.
What?
I'll have to chuck in my day job. So 3 months, they said it was 3 months stint. And within like 6 weeks I had resigned from my job and was on a plane heading to Sydney and then doing prep, and then we were in Doha in the middle of the desert at Khalifa Stadium, and we were setting up a costume department to manufacture 700 to 800 units of costumes of various styles.
That's amazing.
So, I got to meet up with some people I hadn't worked with for like 20 years and then a whole bunch of new people. So it was really exciting. And
real experience.
Fantastic. Loved it.
Good for your sort of career, isn't it?
And it was a little bit different. It wasn't because of all those arena sort of events. It's a different style of costuming than film. It's a different style of costuming for costume hire as well. So totally different elements you had to consider when you're making and manufacturing.
Yeah. Now, and you have also been involved in events in New Zealand. Can you tell us just a little bit about what what you've done here?
Yeah, after I went back and did my master's, and after the first term I opened up my shop, which is supposed to have been just my design concept, but I'm so passionate about it, I knew it was going to work. I got asked to help with the ANZ's float for Pride Festival.
Oh, okay. Oh, really?
Yes.
That would have been exciting.
I got to make feather costumes.
All sorts of things.
Yep, and had to put a brief together as a corporate sort of event because it was the first time they were putting costumes together. So we ended up 25 units of costumes for that. I then got a contact through one of the fairs that I went to at the Retro Fair, and she was looking for someone to make some 70s outfits for for Air New Zealand's anniversary event.
Oh, yes, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes, they went right from there. You know, their early days,
yeah,
which was teal, I think, right.
That's
up,
right.
Didn't they?
Yeah. So we got to do some 70s retro Donny Osmond type outfits, which was very, very fun.
Yes.
And from there, she then asked me to do on site for another film for Standby Wardrobe as well. So each job that I've had, it's actually connected into the next job. And I always remember going through freelancing in my 20s, and I was always told you're only as good as your last job. So, you know, you've got to do your best because you don't know who's going to see your work.
Exactly. And that's where you sort of, you know, you don't know who you're going to meet, and it just follows on from there.
You just don't know who's going to turn up on your doorstep next.
For sure.
Yep. Mm.
Now, I believe you're involved in a teaching job at St. Cuthbert's.
Yes. How exciting that is.
So is that what to do with design or what?
It's a textile technology course, and I'm teaching year 8s, 9s and 10s. So it's basically it's introduction to textiles and fashion, and then they can go and choose at 10, 11, 12 and 13 as a major if they want to.
So what age group is this?
13 to 15.
Oh, lovely.
Cute little things.
Yeah. They'd be really interested too in fashion, I imagine.
Yeah. Yes. And the first year, the year 8s, my head of teacher, Catherine, has been trialling this SCOBY product, which is a yeast grown from kombucha with the kids. And I've seen it happen. It was the first time I've actually seen it happen in a classroom, for sure. Mm. But I did a bit of read-up, and there's a lot of people doing it as from professors and PhDs and, really high laboratory and experimental things. But it's the first time I've actually seen teenagers really excited about the project. So
interesting. Yeah, it's different, isn't it?
My first term, I'm sort of going, oh, my gosh, people need to know about these teenagers and what we're doing and so forth. And Ms. Patel's sort of going, oh, no, it's not really. And I said, no, this is really important. Hey, there's a world conference happening in Leeds in July. I'm going to put a submission in.
Yeah, God, I know.
So, so I did, and I said, look, we may not even get anything
about it. But great for the girls too, isn't it? You know, to participate in this.
Yeah, so next thing you know, they've sent back and said, thank you very much. We would like you to do a poster presentation during the whole conference of 3 days. So we just...
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
I'd be pleased you sort of went ahead with it.
Yeah, the school's really behind us, and the kids are very excited. So, you know, I think it's important to get the kids... give them a new angle on fashion and sustainability. So this to me is my gut feeling tells me it's a good thing. So I pushed it, and it's going to be happening.
Well, that's marvellous. That's really great. Now, you do sewing classes, and they are called Hold Your Hand, is it? Well,
yeah.
I don't know whether I've got that quite right, but
that sounded
interesting.
Yeah. Again, part of this design brief when I did my master's, and trying to connect people back into sewing and textiles because it's been lost out of the schools. And doing the fairs, I do the Auckland Vintage Textile Fair and the Retro Fairs.
Yep.
I found, and I did the Very Vintage Day Out as well, and so many people came up to me who love wearing vintage apparel going, oh, I just want to fix something, but I'm too scared of my sewing machine or it keeps playing up. And so I said, well, come and we'll do a day class. I just jokingly said, oh, you know, bring your sewing machine. I'll come and hold your hand. That's what you need. She said, that's what I need. I need someone to hold my hand.
Yes.
because they were just not quite confident enough to do stuff. Mm-hmm. And they've been really successful. We've had people turn up three or four at a time, a couple of times there's been a few more.
Yes.
But, yeah, they bring their machines. They've got
they bring their own machines along. Yep.
We do a service on their machine because it's usually the machine that's having a...
Oh, they always pay up, sorry,
yeah.
machines.
Yeah, it's always remember. The machine's problem.
Oh, it
is. So we sort of do a hold-your-hand class that way, and we also do an Obi-Wan Kenobi, be one with your machine, and the machine will be one with you.
Yes.
So, you know, your
that's
machine...
That's great because most of us, you know, I can remember struggling with a sewing machine and like... It'd end up, you know, getting a whole pile of knots and I didn't know how to pull it out.
That's right. So, and at the end of the day...
Lost the cotton and...
Yep, all those sort of silly things that happen, and it's like, it's just about knowing, understanding what the machine is capable of doing. And I've also been repairing and getting vintage sewing machines up and running, just straight stitches.
Oh, really? Because we've got some beautiful old Singers over here. Do you have them in Australia?
Yeah. I bought my mum's one with me.
Oh, okay.
And that was part of the container load of stuff that I bought over. Was I think I bought 7 sewing machines.
Oh my gosh.
My partner doesn't know that. Oh, well, he knows now, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But, he's had to store them.
Yes.
But slowly but surely we've been getting them back and going and now I use them. So it's good.
It's great. And do you actually... teach them to sew as well as sort of the learning the machine?
Yeah. I've got one lady that she acquired her grandmother's beautiful Bernina. Her grandmother or her mother used to do a lot of beautiful work and had this really high-end, nice, lovely machine. She goes, I'm so scared of it. And I said, why are you scared of it? She goes, I've never been able to use a sewing machine. And I said, well, come on, let's be one with the machine.
Yeah.
And we did basic sewing.
Excellent doing that. Yes.
And she now does her own upholstery classes and she's been quite good. Just a matter of learning the basics.
Well, that's true. You know, once you learn those, then you can sort of see what's going on, and also to give them, they'd want to sew, wouldn't they? Once they knew how to manage their machine,
A bit of self confidence as well. And you know, just because your machine break down, there's got to be a reason for it to break down, and you can fix it. You know,
yes, great.
A bit of servicing can save you a lot of money, long time.
Yeah. Now you're a member of the Textile Association. What is your involvement there? Is that just as a member, or
as a member? The Textile Institute it is, and they're based in Manchester, and it's an international global organisation. Yes,
I didn't realise it was international.
And there's members from all over the world. There's different sections all over the world. New Zealand has a section itself. Australia has, Pakistan, India, Hong Kong. I think there's one in the States.
Gosh.
There's quite a few in England. They're just all over the place. Wherever there's a textile industry, you'll find a section there. And I'm actually on the council and board and also head of membership as well. So,
do you have a large membership?
It's quite good. It changes. We're in the process of improving the student membership as well. The actual association is over 100 years old now, so a lot of the obviously original members are no longer with us, and there's a lot of members there that are in their 70s and 80s, so there needs to be a bit of a push to get the young'uns in.
Of course, that's the only way these things sort of, you know,
The people that go to these conferences are high-end textile technologists scientists, and one of the fellows that I always try and catch up with is Joe Cunning, and he used to work for DuPont, and I know he was one of the original designers of Lycra back in the 60s and so forth.
Oh, how interesting.
So, it's just
fantastic.
There's so much knowledge and technical.
Yeah, and they have wonderful seminars apparently with all these people talking, so I've heard.
Yeah, yes. Quite interesting. I remember there was one there that were talking about magnets and putting electromagnets into textiles, and they're saying, we've got this wonderful invention, but we don't know how to use it in the in general clientele. And I'm saying, well, let's just knit it into some socks so when they go in the washing machine they can find each other. And they all just looked at me.
Thinking.
Yeah. It's just like, well, that's pretty obvious. And I'm thinking, well, you know. Different thinking. You know.
Now, amongst all the other things you do, I believe you own a B&B in Clevedon. Why don't you have a little chat about that?
Yeah, the little studio. Mm-hmm. The studio was going to be my art studio and workroom, and while I was doing my master's, the art space came up in Clevedon Village, so that went on hold. I put my business down in the village. It meant sense for people to come and see me there. And then we decided to turn the cottage, studio cottage, into a one-room B&B, and it's been going for about 18 months now. And, yeah, it's been quite successful. We've had lots of internationals come through. And
gosh, do you have a website for your
we
B&B?
Have. The website is part of my graciematthews.com.
Yes.
And we're on Airbnb.
Mm-hmm. That's all you need, isn't
that's
it?
That's really what we need, yeah. We're not looking at doing it major sort of things because it is only one space that we can provide. We also have a bit of a niche as my partner's was diagnosed with celiac a few years ago. So everything in our household is gluten-free.
Yeah.
And so we provide a gluten-free breakfast and meals with our B&B as needed.
Gosh, how do you fit that in with all the other things you're doing? Does your partner
management.
Do both breakfast?
Oh, he does the cooking. He does the cooking, so I don't have to worry about that.
Yes.
But it's only a continental breakfast, so we prep that in the morning before our guests arrive, so it's nice and easy. But, it's just another income stream for us.
Oh, wonderful. Mm. Well, you've got so many things you can do, Gracie. It's fantastic. Now, you are on Facebook too, aren't you?
With the Clevedon Costumes and Vintage Apparel has a Facebook page.
Yes.
Currently, we are only open on Saturday mornings, 10 o'clock till 12 by appointment only. That's mainly because my teaching job, even though it's part-time, it's every day, and I have varied rostered days. So it's easier to keep a consistency of just have the Saturday mornings now.
Okay.
And the other page that I run, which again came from one of our Hold Your Hand classes, one of the ladies wanted to make a vintage dress from a Australian Women's Weekly magazine from the 50s.
Oh, okay.
So those who can remember,
remember those.
Yeah, they were just plain tissue paper with circles.
Oh, my gosh, yes, they were.
No name, no numbers, no information.
Exactly. Mm.
And this poor little Sinead, lovely Sinead with her extreme Irish accent going, I don't know what to do, I can't read anything. And the instructions were, here, the belt needs to be finished at 1.5 inches. And that was it. That was the whole instructions.
Oh my
it didn't
gosh.
Give you a pattern.
Yes.
It would say you need to sew up the side seams before you put on the collar.
Okay.
And to a novice,
you
that just
had to
just
do your thinking,
nothing.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
A few that I sort of battled with.
Yeah. But in all the dialogue of the magazines, it's like it always talks about the frock.
Yes.
So, and I'd say, Sinead, how are you going with your frock, love? And she'd be going, well, we're getting there. So we remade the patterns and we redid everything.
Yep.
And it got to a stage when we did meet up for our classes. It was like, come and meet the frockers. What a joke that was. So we thought, that's it. That's what we need. We need a Facebook page. So
that's always
meet the frockers. That's what it's called. We see it as we see it. We love it as we love it.
Yeah.
There's people on there who just like making. There's not necessarily costume people or fashion people. It's just anybody and anyone.
Okay. That's great. Now, for any of the listeners who might want to contact you, what's the best way they do that? Go on your website or
if you'd
like to
website.
Tell them about that and how they get on
The website is graciematthews.com, and it basically covers all the sort of costume work that I do and the classes. There's an email address there that you can email me direct.
Would you like to tell them what the email address is?
Yes, gracie.matthews, number 2@gmail.com. Nice and easy.
And perhaps your telephone number?
Yep, 0220 182 711. First sign of madness is that you ring yourself, just so you know. But
most of us don't know our own cell phone number.
Yeah, means that we're not mad, so that's all good. But there's also the Facebook page called Clevedon Costumes and Vintage Apparel. You can message me through there. Alternatively, you can come and join us at Meet the Frockers.
Mm-hmm.
And we've just been able to download the photos and backstage photos from the Comm Games, which just happened.
Oh, wow. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, because all my colleagues that I did the Arab Games with and with the Olympics, obviously were doing the Comm Games. So there was lots and lots of beautiful photos of work backstage. So,
that sounds wonderful.
Off to those ladies.
Yeah. Now, Gracie, it's been fantastic. And I'm sure all our listeners have enjoyed it immensely. So we've come to the end of our time now. So thank you very much for being on the program. It's wonderful.
No worries. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gracie.
We'll see you at the textile fair.
Exactly.
In August.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Thank you, listeners, for being with us today. And we're going to end the program with one of Andrew Lloyd Webber's songs called Whistle Down the Wind, sung by Donny Osmond. Thank you. Bye for today.
Whistle down the wind. Let your voices carry. Drown out all the rain. Light a patch of darkness, treacherous and scary. Stars whisper when you're sleeping. I'll be there to hold you. I'll be there to stop the chills and all the weeping. Make it clear and strong so the whole night long. Every signal that you send until the very end, I will not abandon you, my precious friend. So try and stem the tide, then you'll raise a banner, send a flare up in the sky, try to burn a torch and try to build a bonfire. Every signal that you send until the very end, I'm there. So whistle down the wind, for I have always been right there.
If you enjoyed our program today, listen every second Wednesday of the month at 2:10 p.m. or download us anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/deco-retro. If you wish to join the Auckland Art Deco Society, phone Frances on 021-255-0241 or email frances@arielengineering.com. Frances, spelt E-S, at Ariel, A-R-I-E-L, engineering.com. Bye for now.